What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Welcome to Hollywood and Levine. I am Ken Levine, your podcast host. This week, part two of my interview with Al Michaels. And if you missed part one, after you listen to this, go back and listen to that, because that was pretty great. Well, this week we focus on football. And of course, Al is the voice of NBC Sunday Night Football. And prior to that, he spent 20 years calling Monday Night Football games on ABC. Well, we talk a lot about his preparation, just what it is like to call a game on national television. We spend time discussing partners, rules of the NFL. If you are a sports fan, this is the episode for you. And even if you're not a sports fan, he's a pretty fascinating guy. Al Michaels, part two, this week on Hollywood and Levine. Part of your job is working with partners, and you have worked with a number of partners. And that really has to be an adjustment, because you really do have to establish a chemistry, and you have a lot of different personalities in different sports.
I've probably worked with over 100.
Wow.
I mean, because if you think about all the sports that I have done, I mean, when I'm at ABC, in a wide world of sports, I did everything. Rugby, high diving, target diving, all kinds of auto racing, ski flying, ski jump, you name it. Motorcycles on ice. So I have worked with, I have, you know, through the years, I've probably worked with, I think, I would bet you it's three figures. You know, baseball, football, hockey, basketball. Most of them were great. I mean, because there's a chemistry that gets developed, and I think I've been fortunate in that most of the people I've worked with have been very smart, want to be good in the business. The hardest thing would be an analyst who would come to the table and think that he or she, because they played the sport or coached the sport, they know it, and you know, so off they go.
Yeah.
And don't want to get any better because, you know, they know, and that's why they're there. But the really, really good ones, and I've had so many, they get into the business of broadcasting. You're not in the ex-jock business. You're in the broadcasting business, which is communication and communication skills. And I take somebody like Tim McCarver. Tim McCarver was the perfect example of a guy who, the minute he left the playing field, went into broadcasting and learned all he could about the inner workings of a broadcast. What are they doing in a truck? What is everybody's job? How does this work? How do we fold this in together? How do we all get synchronized? And that's why, to me, I mean, Tim was as good a baseball analyst as there's ever been. I had the great pleasure of working with him for a lot of years, and he understood how to construct a broadcast.
Goes back to being a broadcaster.
It goes right. Yeah. So Tim was a great player. You know, played in four different decades, World Series. You know, caught Bob Gibson all of those years. I mean, a spectacular career. Could have been. There's no question in my mind. Tim McCarver would have made a tremendous manager, and he had opportunities to. But he chose broadcasting, and then he immersed himself in it. So did John Madden. John Madden's another example of a man who knew everything there is to know about football, Hall of Fame coach, but John learned the broadcasting business. And you take these people, Chris Collinsworth, another classic example.
Now, you have said that he is the best football analyst that you've ever worked with.
Well, I mean, I don't want to say, you know, I'm not going to compare Chris and John Madden. They were both fantastic.
Right, in very different ways.
In different ways.
What makes Chris so good?
Well, number one, going back to what I just talked about, he's in the communications business, mm-hmm. and he understands it. He is unbelievably prepared. I mean, if you know him, he's one of my dearest friends, in addition to being a broadcast partner. A tremendous guy with a big heart. We share, along with the rest of the crew, our goal of, you know, however good we might have been last week, we're going to be better this week. Mm-hmm. So you're never resting on any laurels. You're moving ahead. But he gets it. It's hard to explain, but you sit there with somebody, and it's a comfort level. And it's almost like you're not on the air. You're just having a conversation with somebody. Mm-hmm. Even though there's a game to be broadcast, and I have to do what a play-by-play person does, announce the play, and Chris does the analysis. But there's a symbiosis, which is it just happens. I can't explain it. I really can't. Because if you try to go into, you know, it's going into the old sausage factory. How is it made?
Right. How do you be funny?
How do you be, right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you can't explain it. And I mean, how do they make sausage? I don't want to see how they make it. All I know is that you put it on a plate with some, you know, eggs over easy. It tastes fantastic. So this is what pretty much takes place in our business. And Chris is just, one of the things that makes him so tremendous, I followed sports since I was 6 years old. I've seen God knows how many football games announced, you know, almost 1,000 now between college and
wow.
pro. I've probably done 750 NFL games plus, you know, I did years of college football in Hawaii high school, whatever. I mean, I've seen a few football games.
Yeah.
I think I know a lot about football, a lot. But Chris will go, he'll come in doors that I didn't even know existed. He will see something that I hadn't even thought about. And McCarver did that in baseball, too. It's like, wow, as much as I thought I knew about this, and that's what makes him so great. I mean, it's different. He knows how to come in different doors. So you're basically doing a lot of the same things. I mean, you know, if you watch games and plays develop and all the rest, there's a commonality, but he can take that commonality and make it seem different, and that's an art.
Mm-hmm. One thing that you do that I really appreciate is, boy, you know the rules, and it seems like every third game there's some kind of crazy play, some kind of arcane rule where if he has his left foot in but his knee is over his shoulder, that it's you know, a catch. And the rules change every year, but you really stay up with all of that.
Well, they change and they expand, and I must tell you, it's now gotten to the point where we brought in Terry McCauley last year, the former referee,
mm-hmm.
Officiated 3 Super Bowls and was in the league for about 20 years. We had to, because it's now reached the point in the middle of the game. I mean, I can't go back in my head and think, you know, Section 403, Article 12,
right.
subparagraph, whatever. And so many things are so subjective, and you have to look at them from different angles. So we felt compelled to bring in a man, and Terry did a great job last year. It's funny, we had a year where we had probably fewer plays. Terry's
right.
sitting right there.
Right.
You know, the makeup lady is taking care of him every week, but he's never getting on camera. We finally got him on camera in the playoffs, because we had a crazy play in the Philadelphia-Chicago playoff game. But it's to the point now where you really do need – I mean, Fox started it with Mike Pereira – brought in Dean Blandino, Gene Steratore now is over at CBS. We've got Terry McCauley. You really need that person, because they've been there, and you might know the rules, and you might look at it from one angle, But they have done this. They not only know the rules, but they can interpret what the officials are looking at and what they're seeing. And now you've got New York involved and all of the rest. So it's become so insanely complicated that you do need that extra person in the booth to bail you out in a way.
Right. But it's really impressive how you are on that. My biggest fear in broadcasting baseball, it's not screwing up plays, because mm-hmm. everybody screws up plays. I do. Well, but something happens and I don't know what's going on. That, the manager comes out and the umpires are converging and I'm going, what's happening out there?
Right.
That was always my biggest fear.
Yeah, and that's going to happen. And mm-hmm. there are times when, I don't care how many years you've done it or whatever, where, look, there's been no greater baseball broadcaster ever than Vince Scully. None. I mean, 67 years, mm-hmm. but, Vinny can tell you any number of times when, you're trying to figure out what's going on.
Right.
Because you're not down there. And it's hard. And as a consequence, now you're working through a lot of scenarios in your mind. And the only thing, I think the best thing to do in those circumstances is to say, I'm not sure what's happening here.
Mm-hmm.
But then you go back and, what has just happened? What is taking place? But don't try to play expert when you can't play expert
exactly.
because you don't know.
Yeah.
So I think
it'd be worse.
I think honesty is best at that point. I think you do yourself a disservice if you try to say, this is what's going on and it's not what's going on. And, early in my career, I would try to speculate about certain things and then find out later that I was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I, at that point, knew it was just best to say, all right, folks, I'm not sure what's happening here, but let's take a look at this side and that side and go through what might be happening, but then say, look, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why these days, too, not only you have an official in the booth, but, to me, a sideline reporter is hugely beneficial. We have Michelle Tafoya.
She's great.
She's phenomenal.
Yeah.
She is great. And she has to, be alert. And she's down there on the field. She gets a different perspective than we do. But, boy, she is so fast on her feet. And she is unbelievably talented, not only on the air, but off the air, in helping us go through certain things that she can see and feel that are taking place on the sideline. So I know there's a tendency for people to say, I don't want to hear a sideline reporter. This, hey, coach, how do you feel? No, they don't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are so many very good ones out there. Look, I worked with Leslie Visser and Andrea Kramer and Michelle, and I'll put them up against anybody. I'll put Michelle up against any reporter in the country, print or electronic. She's that good.
Yeah, that's great. Walk me through your preparation, okay? For, let's say, it's going to be Sunday night, Green Bay at Chicago. How do you start preparing for the game? When do you start preparing and how?
Well, you're never not preparing to the extent that even in the offseason, I'm paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
Because what's taking place in April might be relevant in September. Because you're watching how teams are constructing what they're doing in the offseason, the draft process, signing free agents, coaching moves, and all of the rest. So I like to have in my brain kind of a tapestry. My brain sort of works chronologically. I like to think in chronological terms. So if I'm relating a story in September or October, I can go back and I can frame it by, in April, this was happening. And then in June, this happened. And then it changed in August. So in terms of preparation, as I say, you never not prepare. I read about football year-round, every day. Staying abreast of it, talk to people inside the business. I've done it for so many years now. I know, fortunately, a ton of people. I can talk to them during the off-season, just get caught up. And then, as the game approaches, obviously you're really locking in on those teams, and you want to know as much about the teams, the players, the coaches, the owners, as you possibly can. The other thing I think for me that I find to be very beneficial is we do so many teams that are in the spotlight a lot, the Dallas Cowboys, the New England Patriots. So we do a game. A national audience has maybe seen that team 4 weeks out of five prior to when we have them. They've been on Fox. They've been on CBS.
Right.
So I'll probably go back and watch most of those games just to hear what's been talked about. Because if there's a story that you think is relevant, but it's been talked about four or five times, I know that I want to understand what the frame of reference is for the viewer and the listener. What do they know? What don't they know? And the best thing is, you know, to find out something that hasn't been talked about over a 4 or 5 week period, and then you know you've pretty much got a clean slate. But other times, that's why I find it's very important to, especially with those teams, the teams that we have a lot, the Steelers, the Packers, and all of that, you want to know what fans know. What's fun for me a lot is to get teams that people haven't seen. Now, we'll probably get the Cleveland Browns this year.
They were like 1-16 or something a couple of years ago.
As we discussed this, the schedule hasn't come out, but I'm assuming there's a good chance that Cleveland might be on a Sunday night game. So, people may think Jim Brown still plays for them.
Right.
It's been that long.
He doesn't?
Yes, I'll tell you. Right. Well, Leroy Kelly just retired. But and Frank Benefield is still in the secondary. But, it's been so long. So it's kind of fun in a way to have teams you haven't seen in a while.
Right.
And you kind of can start from a different place than you can with the Dallas Cowboys.
Right. So you would go to Chicago when?
2 or 3 days beforehand.
Okay.
And then we try to do is spend one day at practice with the home team and meet with the players and the coaches that we want to interview. And then on the day before the game is when the visiting team comes to town. So we will meet with them, a number of people from that team, at the hotel. But during the week, it's a matter of, looking at tapes, talking to people, reading up on everything. There's so much information out there right now, Ken. I'll tell you, the hardest part right now is delineating between the information and the misinformation. A lot of misinformation.
It goes back to that again.
Oh my God!
It
goes back to what? You'll read something or hear something. So I know if I'm going to deal with something that I'm wondering about, and I read something, I'll go to the horse's mouth. I'll go to the player, the coach, whatever, and say, "Tell me about this," so that I hear from them. And that's, the fans know so much more than they used to now because of the internet and the proliferation of media and all of the rest. But they also know a lot of stuff that, frankly, is junk.
Right, hearsay and stuff from blogs and podcasts. Like, who gets their information from podcasts, for God's sakes?
Nobody, don't take anything that I say seriously.
When you're in the booth, describe to me what you're looking at. I mean, how many monitors and Stratocasters and how many people are surrounding you? What is it like if I'm standing over your shoulder in the broadcast booth?
Well, to my right would be, as you look at the field, Chris Collinsworth. And to my left is Kelly Hayes, Malibu Kelly Hayes, who's been my spotter for as long as I've been doing football on network television, college and pro. And Kelly's there as a second set of eyes for me because you can't see everything. So a lot of times he'll show me, who's in and out of the game because I'm watching the monitor. And I set it up so that the monitor is in front of me, but I can look over the top of the monitor. So I can, it depends, I move my eyes up or down. Up and I'm looking at the field live. Down and I'm looking at the monitor. But I set it up that way because you never want to not see what's on the monitor. Can't watch it all the time. I have to look at the field. So it's a thing where you're probably trying to do both. It's like you have four eyes instead of two. Keeping an eye on the field, but always having the monitor there, and especially if I'm looking at the field live, but I can see, the monitor is in play, maybe 20% of my vision at that point, and I see a camera cut, I'll make sure I look at that because that's what the person at home is seeing. Mm-hmm. So I've got to identify or whatever. I see something that they're seeing, and I miss it. That's not very good. It could be something extremely irrelevant. So, again, it's making the sausage. I don't know how to explain it. It just happens.
Do you tend to watch... Yes, you watch the monitor most of the time. During the actual play, do you tend to watch the field just so that can see something else that you're not basically married to whatever is shown on the monitor?
Well, if it's a running play, it's easy to look at the monitor because it's in a confined area.
Right.
If it's a pass play, then I'll try to look at the field. Because I know if it's a passing situation, for the most part, you know, I want to see which receivers are lined up where, figure out who's on what side of the field. Kind of during the play itself, you know, where you're on camera. I mean, when you're looking at your television set, what you're seeing is the quarterback. He's back in the pocket. Mm-hmm. You're not seeing the receivers running their routes at that point. So I know he's back there. I've got to keep an eye on, you know, is he going to get sacked? Is he under pressure? But I also will try to glance at the field to see if I can, you know, discern at that point what basic routes they're running, who's where. Mm-hmm. You know, is this guy running a go route? Somebody's going over the middle. So that gives you a little heads up on where the ball might be going. So that's what you try to do. You know, sometimes it really works well. Other times, it's like you're fooled, too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're kind of watching the play along with the fans, but at least I have a general idea as to who's where at any particular time.
One thing I love about your broadcast is you bring an enthusiasm to the game. You've been doing it all these years, and yet you really sound like you genuinely are excited to be there and to be calling that game. And, you know, to have that love and passion after all those years, it really does come through.
Well, I really love sports, Ken. It's unscripted drama. I love the drama. I love drama. Some fans still think announcers root. Yeah, I root. You know what I root for? Overtime. I want a close game. I want drama. I want controversy. I want excitement. I still get a thrill. I know Vinny always talked about Vince Scully, you know, the crowd still excites me. Still excites me to drive up to the stadium, to walk into the stadium, to watch the stadium fill up, the lights come on. I've been tremendously fortunate in that most of my career, especially in the second half of it, has been most of the games are on national television. They're important. They're big. So many people are watching it. You know, to be on the number one show on television now 8 years in a row is astonishing. Mm-hmm. So I've lucked into the best of the best in my career, and I never forget it. And I know Kurt Gowdy, who I talked about earlier, who I loved, I idolized, and I actually got to meet him when I was in college. Mm-hmm. And he was doing the Red Sox in Scottsdale, Arizona in spring training, and brought him a tape machine and he gave me some tips and all that. Then I got to work the World Series with him and the Olympics and all of the rest. And I'll never forget, Kurt said to me at one point when I was young and, you know, things were going pretty well. And, you know, he said, you know, you're going to have a great career. He said, don't get jaded. Don't get jaded. Don't, you know, there are too many people that he knew in the business who would get to a certain point and then they'd bitch about they didn't get certain assignments or whatever, or they're doing another game. And those words always rang in my ears. But I still love sports. Even when I'm not doing a game, I mean, I can get immersed in a telecast. I mean, we're taping this the day after, you know, Tiger Woods just won the Masters.
Wasn't that great?
I mean,
that's
4 hours of fantastic television. Mm-hmm. CBS did a wonderful job yesterday capturing everything. And, I mean, that was riveting. So if I still feel that way about sports. You go to the stadium, you don't know what's going to happen. The last four Super Bowls I've done, amazingly enough, have all gone down to either the last play of the game or the last 30 seconds, which is crazy. You know, you dream about that. It's not quite as exciting if the score is 45-3 in the third quarter, But then, you know, I'll play the
then
string.
Then you get stories
I'll
and
play
stuff.
The string
fun,
out, right. Yeah. And then you know this next week. So right. You have another chance to, you know, pop open a cork for a bottle of champagne the next week.
Right.
So that's pretty much how I look at it. I've had the job that I can't tell you how many millions of people would love to have had. And I was the anointed one and the blessed one who got this job. And I never forgot it. And it's great. I mean, I don't want to, you know, I don't believe in reincarnation, but I wrote in the book, if there is such a thing and God wanted to get even with me in my next life, I will be working in a sulfur mine in Mongolia. Not only that, I'll be on the night shift, and that'll make up for this life.
One final quick question. How well do you sleep before the night you have to do a Super Bowl?
Pretty much the same as any night's sleep. I mean, I'm kind of like up and, you know, two or three times during the night. I mean, it's just the normal pattern. Early in my career, yeah, I mean, it was very exciting because I don't know how much I slept before that 1972 World Series when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. It's going to be, you know, an unbelievable experience and all of that. I can't remember, but it's pretty much the same right now because I guess it's experience, it's having been there and all of the rest. You know, it's more an excitement than it is a nervousness. You're anxious. You know, it's funny, the Super Bowl, for instance, is an event that is watched by, you know, 100 million to 110 million or more people, and I've done 10 of them now.
Wow.
And I know it's like crazy over a 30-year period. We get it every 3 years. And I think that people say, are you nervous? And I think it's like I've heard players say, game starts, and yeah, there's an excitement and all. And then the game starts, and then the first play is this contact, and then you kind of fall.
Settle in. Yeah.
It's the same thing for me on the Super Bowl or any big event that I've done. You know, you're excited. You want to, you know, get off to a good start. I liken it to a horse race, and you're a horse, and you're coming out of the gate,
mm-hmm.
and you don't want to stumble. You don't want to throw the jockey. Mm-hmm. You want to break cleanly. And if you can get off to that good start, and then you're rolling. I mean, that first World Series, you know, like I say, I'm just hoping that air will come out of my mouth coming on camera. And then by the seventh game in the ninth inning, man, I'm right at home. This is great. This is an e-ride at Disneyland Plus. So it's getting into the rhythm, getting into the groove. And once it goes, you've been there before, and it's very exciting.
Great. Well, Al, this has really been a treat. Thank you so much. And look forward to seeing you on TV.
I hope so, Ken. Take care, man.
Thank you. And that will do it for this week. Again, our thanks to Adam and Susie Meister-Butler, Bruce and Jason Miller, Howard Hoffman, and John Wolfer. If you want to write me, I will write you back. Just email me at HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. That's HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. Follow me on Twitter @KenLevine, Instagram Hollywood and Levine. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.